Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. How are you? I've got a great show lined up for you. We have a returning guest to talk about a very timely and important subject for you. Ready? 5-point retirement portfolio checkup. Now, I've never said on this program you should check on your portfolio, right? No, of course I do. All the time. Well, I have a co-conspirator on this today. Christine Benz is our guest. She is, let me get this long list of credentials and accomplishments, Director of Personal Finance for Morningstar and Senior Columnist for Morningstar.com, the firm's website for individual investors. She's also the author of 30-Minute Money Solutions, a step-by-step guide to managing your finances. She's co-author of Morningstar Guide to Mutual Funds, 5-Star Strategies for Success. Before assuming her roles in 2010, she served as editor of Morningstar's Director of Mutual Fund Analysis. She's previously edited Morningstar Mutual Funds and Morningstar Fund Investor. She's worked as an analyst and editor with Morningstar since 1993. Bachelor's degrees in political science and Russian and Eastern European studies, which are, I'm sure, very relevant today, Christine, with everything happening in Europe and all of those places over there that we hear about.
Absolutely. Well, you know, a view of history is great no matter what you're doing, but especially when it comes to the market, because we tend to see history repeat itself. It's really helpful to be mindful of the effects of history.
Absolutely. And yeah, because we sometimes scratch our head and say, this is weird. Then we go back and we look at the historical consequence and go, not so much.
Right,
so,
exactly.
Yeah, the general thing we like to say over here in America is, of course, they've always been fighting over there, but that's the way the world has worked. Okay, so from your perch, Director of Personal Finance for Morningstar, we have the luxury of having Christine help us kind of dive in here to a subject that is very near and dear to what I do, and that's talking about keeping tabs on your portfolio. And of course, what do you call it? They call it a disclaimer or acknowledgement, Christine. Christine knows this, but for my listeners, we do a lot of work with Morningstar. We're very pleased to use their resources and use them in working with our clients. So let's dive into this 5-point retirement portfolio checkup. Christine, number one on your list is what?
It's check up on your savings and spending plan. So before you get into evaluating your portfolio and its characteristics, check up to make sure that if you're someone who's still accumulating money for retirement, that you're actually setting enough aside, because ultimately it doesn't matter how good the investments you choose are if you don't save enough to begin with. So do kind of a check on whether you are on track from that standpoint. I like to point people to calculators that can be holistic and factor in a number of different factors. One I often point people to is T. Rowe Price's retirement income calculator. Mm-hmm. Kind of just do that checkup to see, well, am I on track given what I hope to achieve, when I hope to retire, and my expected income in retirement? Does that savings rate put me on track?
Amen to that.
Yeah, and so the other thing is, for folks who are already retired, you want to be thinking about, is my spending rate on track with where it needs to be, or am I perhaps overspending? Mm. Because while you may not be in savings mode anymore, if you're spending too much, that too has the potential to break your retirement plan.
Okay, there's a lot there. Let's dig in a little deeper, Christine, because okay. I love this subject. Okay, so number one, you know, you talk about the savings and how important that saving rate is. I want to stress to our listeners, before you start saving for retirement, you got to first save for a savings emergency account, because so often people get so excited. And I like this, that they get excited about the idea of saving for retirement and investing monies, that very often they overlook just having a little nest egg, a little emergency fund that they can go to if something happens, so that once you start investing, you don't have to disrupt your investment plan to pay for the emergency. So that's a good step one. And the savings rate, you're right, there are these calculators and different things that people can do to get on a plan, and I get asked a lot, well, how much should I be saving?
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I'm going to say, Christine, you know, as much as possible, right?
Right,
but,
right.
But there's got to be a realistic part of this, and I'm, you know, this is one of those things where I prescribe this for myself. You know, I could save every nickel I make, and I would get real bored real quick, get frustrated, and not have any fun, and then where is the joy and motivation in that?
Exactly. So you need to find simple ways to increase your savings rate. People can do things like direct their tax refund toward, at least some of it toward their investments, or maybe you've been in on this refinancing boom if you have a mortgage. You could do something like that, save part of the savings from your refinancing plan to direct that into some sort of an automatic investment program. I love the idea of automating your savings. So just like you do with a 401k,
right,
you can put some of these contributions on autopilot, whether you're contributing to an IRA of some kind, or maybe you're just contributing into some sort of a tax brokerage account. Get that money coming right out of your checking account into whatever investment vehicle you're using. And the nice thing is investment providers are all too eager to help set this up for you. So it shouldn't be difficult. You can automate those contributions. And the beauty of doing that is that you never have a chance to spend that money. They're going right into your investment account.
Very good. Well, if you automate it, hey, look, it's in, and you're, say you're 45 and all you need is 20, what is that? 20 times, so what do we need? About 240 easy payments. That's a 240 easy installment payment plan. I like that. No, it's good. Get it automated, because if it's not in the checking account, we're not going to be as likely to spend it. And again, if it's in the investments, it goes directly in there. I love that. And you mentioned earlier also, Christine, which is another very, very important subject, and we're just digging into, you know, number one on your five-point list, and that is the spending rate. You know, there's been the rules of thumb that have been around for a long time, and also different studies that have been done about what's quote-unquote a safe withdrawal rate. And I guess we've settled on around 4%. There's been some that say less, some that say more. But I guess the big thing for me, it kind of reminds me of that Castaway movie with Tom Hanks, when that moment when he finally figures out a way to escape the endless waves that keep him on the island. He finally figures out a way to escape the big waves, and he has that moment where he looks back and he sees the island disappearing into the mist, and all he has on his raft is all he's got for his journey.
Right. And that's how people feel when they're embarking on retirement, right?
Yeah. So don't use up all of your supplies the first couple years, because then you're going to be adrift without, you know, like he did toward the end of that, where he let go, threw his paddles out in the water, said, that's it. You don't want to be throwing the paddles out in the water. You got to really stay after it.
Right. And, you know, I think people hear this 4% rule, it's sometimes called. And the problem is it's very dependent on a couple things. One, what your time horizon looks like.
True.
If you're a very young retiree with maybe a 35 or 40-year time horizon, well, remember that the 4% rule has really only been stress-tested over a 30-year. It assumes a 30-year time horizon. So if you've got a longer time horizon like that, you'd need to be more careful. The same is true for people who want to have a very conservative asset allocation. So they like having more in bonds and cash. Well, the trade-off is that means you get to take less of your portfolio in retirement in terms of your spending rate, because the research that has been done on the 4% rule kind of assumes a 60% stock, 40% bond portfolio. If your portfolio is much more conservative, it doesn't have the return potential of that higher equity portfolio.
That's right. And it really needs to be a personalized. I always tell people that, because, you know, everybody's bombarded, as you know, Christine, with all these different ideas and rules of thumbs and something they catch on television with a drive-by analysis. And it's all general rules of thumb. And I always stress to people, a rule of thumb or this general advice out there is a place to start, is not a place to end.
That's right. And frankly, this is an area, because it is such an important decision that retirees make. This is an area where, even if you've been kind of a dedicated do-it-yourselfer throughout your investing career, this is maybe one area to reach out for help. Because if you start out with too aggressive of a spending rate in retirement, that really has the potential to derail your plan, and you may have trouble getting back on track.
Okay, well, that's very, very helpful, Christine, because it's, you got to be careful with it and pay attention to it. Now, another area that I know that we need to get to is, well, let's do this. We'll grab a quick break. We'll come back and dig a little deeper. Christine Benz, our guest, ladies and gentlemen, Director of Personal Finance for Morningstar, morningstar.com, and we're talking about five-point retirement portfolio checkup special report. So stay right there. We'll be back with Christine.
Here's a newsflash. All financial advisors are not created equal. Some invest in their education by getting advanced degrees and professional certifications. Some don't. Some advisors get multiple licenses and offer a wide range of solutions. Some don't. Some advisors choose to be independent. Some don't. Some advisors disclose how they are paid and the fees they charge. Some don't. Please don't settle for a don't. Let me introduce you to independent advisor David Holland. David is a CPA, a certified financial planner, a personal financial specialist, and a chartered financial consultant. With 23 years financial experience, David offers a wide range of personalized solutions and discloses all fees in writing. Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com to schedule your one-on-one meeting.
All right, we're back with Christine Benz talking with us from Morningstar, morningstar.com, and we're going to jump over to another real important inspection point or portfolio checkup point, and that is check up on your asset allocation. So what's the important thing here, Christine?
The key thing is to make sure that your portfolio's combination of stocks, bonds, and cash makes sense given your proximity to needing your money. So you made the really important point. If you have emergency expenses that might crop up, and we all do, the key there is to make sure that you have very liquid assets that you can tap at a moment's notice without the risk of kind of disrupting your investment, your future investment returns. The same is true if you're saving for retirement. You need to have your proximity to portfolio drawdown in mind. So if you're someone who's in your 20s and 30s, you can afford to have most of your retirement portfolio in stocks, to the extent that you can live with the volatility that comes with a very stock-heavy portfolio. But when you get closer and closer to retirement, it's really important to start taking some chips off the table to make sure that when you need to begin drawing on that portfolio, you have at least some liquid assets at the ready in case the long-term piece of your portfolio isn't performing particularly well at that time.
Excellent. Yeah, so end of 2007, it would have been good to have some extra cash if we could go back in our time machine and not have to pull out in 2008 or 2009 a lot out of the equity portion of our portfolio.
Well, that's the problem, too. We've been through a period of very good equity market returns. And one thing that I see, I suspect you see this in your practice, too, is that people start feeling a lot more comfortable with the idea of holding larger and larger equity stakes. So unfortunately, investors sometimes do the opposite of what they should be doing in that they kind of want to let those winners ride. They want to put more money toward what has worked well, when in reality, right now is probably a reasonable time to be thinking about pulling back equity exposure a little bit for many investors.
Good point. Well, they call that the recency effect, right? Where the
exactly.
Most recent performance. And that's why, you know, ironically, and I confess I make fun of this a lot, Christine, but the disclosure that's at the bottom of everything, everywhere, that says anything we do with investments, that prior performance is not necessarily indicative of future results. You may incur a profit or loss. You know, there's a reason for that, because investors do feel or could believe potentially or be led to believe that prior performance is indicative of what's going to happen, and it's just not so.
It's not so. And in fact, when we look at our data on mutual funds, and we've got a lot of it in-house at Morningstar, one thing we see is that investors often do what I say, which is drive with the rear view mirror, that they are expecting that if a fund has had really stellar performance in the past, that's when they add their dollars to the fund. And unfortunately, we see these timing mistakes again and again, where investors are adding money to a hot asset class or a hot fund at exactly the wrong time. Frankly, we saw it with bonds coming out of the financial crisis, where investors, they were feeling very risk averse at that point, when in hindsight, it was a great money to be adding stocks. What they were doing was buying bond funds.
Yeah, there's another fancy term for this. It's called reversion to the mean or reversion to the average, where you have something, some area, a mutual fund or stock or a area of the market that just gone into the stratosphere. Well, it's not going to stay on that trajectory. Okay, it's going to come back down, or at least come, you know, maybe not go at the same pace.
Right. Even if it's a great investment over the long haul, it will inevitably have performance peaks and troughs, and you usually want to be a buyer of that great investment when it is in one of those troughs, as opposed to when it looks like everything will be perfectly rosy for the foreseeable future. We do tend to see that reversion of the mean, and it's one of those things that's like you don't even have to know specifically about the fundamentals of an investment to know that the one that has that streak of maybe 30%+ annual returns, that is not going to last, that it will inevitably have some sort of performance hiccup.
Good point. Good point. That's why there's that old adage of pinching yourself, right?
Right.
Get your own attention. In fact, I just met Christine with a prospective client who's becoming a client, and that, you know, they had a stock that they were investing in, and they know it's something that they just have had for a long time, and they have an attachment to it. And, you know, they kind of stepped back from it and said, you know, we really have to be more diversified, and they had to really look at it and focus on it. And I had already made the recommendation, but they kind of just had a conversation with themselves. It was kind of interesting to participate, and they did exactly what you said. Say, you know, we've had a good run. Let's now be a little more cautious.
Right. That's a terrific strategy. And, you know, on the flip side, it's also a great time if you've been looking at a company, whether it's Apple or Facebook or some other fairly well-managed company with seemingly a lot to recommend it. You're always going to be better off adding to it when it's had a little bit of a performance stumble versus when everything's lining up just perfectly.
That's a good point. Well, that brings us to number three on your list, is checking up on your portfolio's performance. So is this, you know, again, you talked about looking in the rearview mirror. Is this looking at how it's done over the last year, 3 years, longer term average, or is it more about what's anticipated going forward, or both?
It's both. So I think for most investors, it's really important, rather than comparing their portfolio's performance to, say, the S&P 500 or some other equity-only benchmark, it's really important to make sure that you're using a good benchmark for your portfolio's performance. That's one reason I'm an enthusiast of setting up kind of a custom benchmark, and this is something you can do on our website, Morningstar.com, where you pick a portfolio that consists of simple exchange-traded funds that generally mirrors your portfolio's asset allocation. Keep it very simple, and the idea there is you're kind of checking your investment selection, that you are saying, how would my hand-selected investments compare to this portfolio of very inexpensive index funds? If over a period of time you see that you're not really adding a lot of value, to me that's an argument that maybe you too should consider a portfolio consisting of very cheap index funds or exchange-traded funds.
I definitely agree with that, Christine. I like the idea of having a kind of a core of the exchange-traded funds, ETFs, index funds, no-load, low-cost funds. I tend to be a bit biased in my preference for that. And then around that, or on top of that, or in addition to that, we might bring in other investment categories, but there's a certain amount of hedging that is appropriate. And when I'm not talking about a hedge fund per se, but a certain
right.
amount of hedging our bets, if you will, that, you know, we could be real wrong, real bad, and
right.
let's have a little bit of a core portfolio.
Right. I think that makes a lot of sense, that core and explore idea. So get your basics covered with very low cost exposures, and then if you're so inclined, you can layer on a little bit of secret sauce here and there.
I like that. Core, get your core, then explore, look for some of Christine's secret sauce. I like that. That's smart. All right. Well, if you're just joining us, Christine Benz on the line with me, Director of Personal Finance for Morningstar. We're talking about 5-Point Retirement Portfolio Checkup, a special report. Morningstar.com is the website. And we're going to grab a quick break, and we'll be right back with Christine to go on points 4 and 5. Stay right there.
Does getting financial advice seem like a game of cat and mouse? Then maybe it's time to hire a fiduciary. What's a fiduciary? That's a financial professional who puts the needs of his clients ahead of his own. Being a fiduciary also means that the advisor should recommend the products and services he believes will best serve his client's needs, not what an insurance or investment company tells him he has to sell. So next time you're talking to an advisor, ask him, are you a fiduciary? The answer should only be yes or no. If the advisor doesn't know, then the answer is probably no. This public service announcement has been brought to you by Holland Financial. We want to help you to plan stronger. For more information, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And welcome back. We're here to talk to Christine Benz. We're returning from our break. Morningstar.com is the website. Back to our five-point retirement portfolio checkup. Point number four, which is, actually we kind of got into it a little bit, referring to some secret sauce, Christine, which is the individual holdings. So there's nothing wrong fundamentally with having, again, that core portfolio and then maybe laddering or layering in some individual stock holdings. There are some folks that's all they believe in, and they totally build their portfolios, either an individual investor or an advisor totally builds on individual holdings. And I tend to like more diversification than that, but there's nothing wrong with that if that's what somebody wants to do. If somebody's going to do that, how should they review or check the performance or evaluate those individual holdings?
Well, if they have individual stocks, I think they want to focus primarily on the fundamentals of the companies that they might own. And I think you have to remember, if you do hold individual stocks versus mutual funds, you are on the hook for a little more due diligence on an ongoing basis. So you want to pay attention to the company's fundamentals. Certainly, it's how its profitability is looking via measures like return on equity. You also want to focus on valuation. And one thing that we are firmly attuned to at Morningstar is, if you are finding that high-quality company, making sure that you are paying a fair price for it. We often say that investors should look for companies that have what we call moats, economic moats.
Oh,
and
yeah,
that means a sustainable competitive advantage. So you also want to stay attuned to that moat trend. If a company was the big player in its industry for many years, but there have been competitors encroaching on its market, you want to stay tuned to those developments. So focus your attention squarely on fundamentals and valuation when sizing up those individual companies in your portfolio.
Well put, Christine. And it's also getting in there and actually reading the financials of the company. And heaven forbid you read the footnotes to the financial statements and what the accountants say about the possibility of gains and losses and statement.
There's a lot of important stuff in there.
Oh, there's a lot of good stuff. I love that stuff. I just, you know, I caution people to be careful what they're biting off, because you start reading some of that, it sometimes can be another language. But hey, that's what us CPAs like to do. So, all right, I think you made the point very well. There is an additional layer of due diligence. Now, you've got a Morningstar website. Of course, you've got the ability to go in and take advantage of some of that individual stock analysis that your firm is providing and already doing.
Yeah, that's part of our premium service, where we have written reports on many companies, about 1,000 individual companies, and it's a global universe. So it's a broad coverage universe with a lot of great information. I would also say, though, for people who don't want to pony up for the premium service, there's also a lot of great free data on the site, and I think we organize it in a really easy-to-use way. We also link to company filings, so you can find the data points are right on the website, but you can also link right through to the 10-Ks, for example, that you might want to read on a company that you own.
Right, and we're not talking about a 6-mile run. We're talking about we're talking about the filing. Where does that go? The SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission. So
that's right.
We're talking about a governmental filing, you runners out there. Now let's talk about this, which I think is a wonderful kind of add-on to this checking your individual holdings point, Christine. Which is, and I know it's a loaded question, but when's the right time to sell an individual stock?
Well, it is an important question and perhaps a loaded question. I would say for each company that you own in your portfolio and funds for that matter, you should articulate, what is my thesis for this thing? What are the main reasons I own this thing? And the catalyst to sell, in my view, would be if any of those things change in a fundamental way. So, you know, maybe you own Apple stock because you think it will always be the leading consumer electronics company in the world. But then maybe there are upstart competitors that begin to encroach on that title. Those would be really key considerations that would potentially motivate a sale, as would some major change in valuation. So maybe a company you owned and it's been a great performer for you is suddenly very, very expensive, maybe treacherously expensive. That would be another reason to consider selling an individual stock holding. Of course, you'd also want to bear in mind the tax consequences of selling, but certainly valuation would be one of the major catalysts.
That's great, Christine. Whenever somebody mentions Apple, you know, in that context, I always think of kind of scenario, and I don't know why. I'm fascinated with the idea of at some point we may have some sort of holographic personal assistant that, you know, kind of pops up out of a ring on your finger. If a company ever does that, and it's not Apple, I think that would be a day to reevaluate Apple.
Exactly.
So innovation is a two-edged sword. All right, and we've got time for one more of our five-point retirement portfolio checkup, and that is check out model portfolios, both for savers and retirees. What are you sharing with us there, Christine?
So we've crafted a series of model portfolios. There are six portfolios geared toward people who are still working, still in accumulation mode. We've populated them with mutual funds for three of the portfolios, with exchange-traded funds for index aficionados with three of the other saver portfolios. And then we've also created six portfolios for people who are already retired. And the main idea there isn't, we're not selling anything here, but the idea is just to showcase here are some sensible asset allocation mixes and individual investment choices for people at various life stages. The portfolios are there to demonstrate what we think are good asset allocation principles as well as good fund selection principles. So we've got kind of static asset allocation mixes. We're not going to be changing things around a lot. We're using a strategic approach to asset allocation. So we're only changing things up when we need to rebalance. And when we're getting a little bit closer to our goal dates, we'll also reduce the equity exposure.
All right, that's fair. No, that's good.
Yeah.
And I like the way you put that, because I think that it's a good starting point for people. Again, like we talked about earlier, is a good starting point on evaluating these approaches and adjusting them to their individual situations.
I think that's so important. So we wouldn't say you should buy these model portfolios exactly as we've depicted them here. Chances are, if investors have been investing a while, they've already got some good building blocks in their portfolios. They just need a little bit of guidance about, well, is this asset allocation mix sensible given what I'm trying to achieve, given where I am in my life stage? The portfolios are there to just kind of serve as another check on what you may be doing with your portfolio.
Excellent. Thank you, Christine Benz, for checking in with us, Director of Personal Finance for Morningstar, 5-Point Retirement Portfolio Checkup, a special report we've been talking with Christine about. Morningstar.com is the website. Christine, we'll have you back. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.